Hello and welcome to Batflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast in military fatigues. I'm your host, Wing Commander John McGee. If you're here for the surface level baseball analysis and bad army puns, this is the right place to come for a roundup of the week in baseball. Before we get going, remember to follow us on Twitter at Batflips_nerds, on Facebook, facebook.com/Batflips and Nerds, and go over to our website, batflipsandnerds.com, where we've had some brilliant new features this week, one of which we'll talk a little bit about later on. Obviously, if you're listening to us, thanks a lot. We're on all the big podcast platforms, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher. Please give us a 5-star rating. Helps get us up those algorithms, up those rankings, gets more eyeballs in front of our product and gets more people listening to us. So just go on, do us all a favor, do us a solid, and give us a 5-star review. If you don't, we'll set our own 5-star general on you, Tom Pringle. Unfortunately, still not with us this week. He claims that he's fighting ISIS, but I'm wondering if the Padres' obsession is basically his cover story and that we have in our midst a shit, uncommitted, wannabe Andy McNabb desperately groping for the world's worst cover story. Tom's back next week, and we'll put that to him and see if we can shake it out of him. Nor, I'm afraid, do we have the man who'd make a great militarian in the General Melchett mode, in that he keeps coming back for more and more punishment. Our ace, but certainly not Richmond Baseball's Ben Carter. Again, if you want to go to the Richmond Baseball website and look up Ben's pitching line for this week, it'll make you chuckle. The good news is we do have backup in the form of the man whose bloodiest campaign so far is in stewarding the Webb Albers Championship, which is a fantasy baseball competition based solely on choosing relievers. It's Darius Austin. How are you, Darius?
I'm doing very well. I like to get the Webb Albers Championship mentioned in as many venues as possible, even if they're entirely unrelated. So I'm glad we could get that in at the start. And looking forward to taking the mick out of Ben and Tom now that they're not here to defend themselves.
Absolutely not. So Ben was a late dropout. We knew Tom wasn't going to be here because unfortunately his if you like the world's flakiest man, if you like on the other hand actually doing a really important job defending the valor and integrity of our country, we certainly prefer the former to the latter. But take whichever. So yeah, let's get plenty of jabs in. But we've got quite a lot of baseball to talk about. Do you want to start on the Webb Albers Championship? We might as well, now that I've mentioned it. For those guys who maybe haven't heard about it and don't know who Ryan Webb and Matt Albers are, should we start by giving a little bit of an introduction to the guys in the UK, to those two and the Webb Albers Championship? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the subject on which I'm most qualified to talk without any preparation, so that's not too much of a problem. Basically, if you've ever listened to Effectively Wild, you'd already be familiar with this particular record. But Ryan Webb and Matt Albers are two extremely marginal relievers who happen to hold the distinction for being the first and second on the leaderboard of games finished without a save. So in other words, they come into games either when their team is way, way down or leading by so many runs the closer doesn't need to come in. And they finish off the game, and they've never once in their careers, this is now spanning quite a few years, got a save. So I think Webb is on 105 games finished without a save, and Albers on 102. Nobody else in baseball history is close to them. It's also quite an interesting record because obviously as soon as one of them gets a save, then they lose, game over. So we're sort of all constantly waiting for one of them to get one, and it hasn't happened yet. And not entirely sure that it ever will, but something for everybody to watch. So yeah, the Webb Albers Championship is based on just that. It's the simplest fantasy league you're playing. One statistic, games finished. And it's also the hardest one to draft because there isn't any guide out there that's going to help you. Nobody's out there giving you fancy advice about who are the top games finished without a save relievers to draft. So you just kind of have to scour some bullpens, figure out who's good enough to stay on the big league team without actually ever getting a save opportunity, and then draft them. So, yeah, that's the Webb Albers Championship. We're in our third year now. And yeah, I think we seem to be getting more people every year, actually. So despite sounding incredibly marginal and ridiculous, it just gets more popular.
Well, we are all in favour of the marginal and ridiculous, as of course are your friends Ben and Jeff on Effectively Wild, which we seem to mention almost every week. If you aren't listening to it, then do go and listen to it alongside listening to us and giving us a 5-star rating. Do it for them too, because they deserve it certainly as much as we do, if not more. Going from one marginal topic of marginal relievers to another, it wouldn't be a week on Batflips and Nerds if we weren't talking about Eric Thames and his nickname. So, Darius, this is the $64 million question of this week. Are we any nearer to having a definitive nickname for our favourite, your favourite, everybody's favourite man named after a river who hit a lot of home runs in Korea, Eric Thames?
I'm not sure that I'd say we're closer. Nobody seems to have come out with one sort of outstanding suggestion. I've not had anybody come out in support of any of the existing suggestions over the others. So I still kind of like T-Rex. I don't know if that's because I came up with it first. Somebody else in the Effectively Wild group basically followed exactly the same thought pattern as me and then read the article and went, oh, I've just realized that this is already suggested. But I kind of like that two people did the same thing independently. I'm kind of maybe just thinking I might watch a couple of Brewers broadcasts and see if they make any silly comments or references, because that's kind of how Brandon Belt's nickname, Baby Giraffe, came about. the Giants broadcast saying he sort of moved like a baby giraffe in the outfield. And next thing you knew it, that's what everyone was calling him. So maybe something like that will come up. But right now I'm going with T-Rex, but I'm not saying it's the final choice. Have you got a favourite?
Well, I like Neptune, which was another of yours.
You know, I do kind of like Neptune.
In being the water god and all that. And I also, I would genuinely like to try and get something in there that's got a bit of a beer angle. So, you know, I think we came up, I don't know if we talked about this on the pod, but certainly we have on Twitter afterwards about calling him London Pride and naming him after the most famous beer made on the Thames. Unfortunately, London Pride is a pretty wretched drink. The type of thing that certain members of the British political establishment, or not members of the British political establishment, if you believe how they posit it themselves, would choose to drink. And whether that's a good or a bad thing, anyone can imply themselves. But hey, there you go. So maybe London Pride should be choked off, despite the fact that it's a nice piece of wordplay. I wonder, Neptune and T-Rex could both conceivably be wrestling names. So I think that Thames would be into that too. I think what we should do, though, I think this is a challenge to ourselves and to anybody listening, is we've got to try and get this over, haven't we? I was listening to another podcast this week, a Red Sox one, where they were talking about Mitch Moreland's nickname, which is Mitchie Two Bags, because he hit so many doubles, and it came from Mitchie Four Bags, you know, a guy they were joking was going to hit all the home runs that David Ortiz was missing, and they've been using it on ESPN. Buster Olney used it on the Baseball Tonight podcast, so that one certainly seeped into the mainstream. So that's our challenge: either Neptune or T-Rex, or, you know, the river, heaven forbid.
The thing I like about Mitchie Two Bags is, you know, that Mitch Moreland's going to stop hitting tons of doubles and everybody's still going to be calling him Mitchie Two Bags.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's going to be Mitchie Scratchy Singles and above average first base defense. Doesn't quite trip off the tongue, does it?
No, he's stuck with Mitchie Two Bags now, and I like it.
Yeah, I certainly like it. And I like him at the moment, certainly more than most of the members of that Boston Sox playing side. We'll come on to what the hell's going on in Boston, or certainly has gone in Boston this week. I've got some views. We didn't touch on it enough last week, and I think we need to come back to it. But before that, you know, there's been some newsy stuff this week, and I think some interesting topics to chew through for, you know, 5 minutes each. There's only two of us, so maybe we can have a bit of back and forth. The first one is more of a newsy point, but worth dwelling on momentarily, is that this has not been a good week for fans of fun baseball players in the injury stakes, in that there's been a handful of really cool, fun players who look like they're going to be out for a long time. So Adam Eaton, he's had a season-ending knee injury. Noah Syndergaard was scratched from start after pitching 1.5 innings at the back end of last week, when there was a lot of talk about whether he should or shouldn't have gone for an MRI. Yoenis Cespedes looks like he's going to be out for a long time, when initially the prognosis was relatively good. And of course, he is the most fun player in baseball. And if you have any other opinion to that, you are wrong. And lastly, I would be remiss not to mention it, simply because Tom would slap me on the wrist more than he's going to for the awful militaria that I've been punting in his direction. Stephen Wright, the Red Sox knuckleballer, looks like he's probably going to have season-ending surgery next week. And, you know, knuckleballers are fun, except when they're on your team and seemingly have lost the ability to throw a knuckleball. So, Stephen Wright, I'm sorry to see the back of your doughy visage in some respects, but also glad to be able to see your giant doughy posterior walking and waddling off into the distance. So any of those that you sort of were saddened by, Guard, Cespedes, or any others that I've missed?
Yeah, I mean, they're all a loss, obviously. From a purely selfish standpoint, I had Adam Eaton on a couple of fantasy teams, so that was one that hurt me personally deeply.
Gone.
But the thing with the Nationals is they are still terrifying. I think this levels the playing field a tiny bit, but I still think they're going to run away with that division. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think you're right about Cespedes. He's probably the most fun of the group, and that both of those situations raise a larger question about the Mets. And it doesn't particularly seem like they've got a very good system there. There's not a very healthy culture going on with Syndergaard not wanting to have the MRI, and mm-hmm. the team sort of winging, okay, well, you can go and pitch then. If they actually thought he was hurt, I don't know why they would do that. And Terry Collins, I think, has been certainly abusing his relievers for years. So I think they've definitely got a problem with some kind of injury culture there that they need to sort out. And maybe this will be a wake-up call for them, although I'm sure Mets fans will tell us that they aren't going to change anything because this has been going on for a while. But yeah, I think it's not great. And certainly we would like to see the best players in baseball on the field. So it's sad to see all of them go. And certainly in the case of Syndergaard and Eaton, it's probably going to be, well, months for Syndergaard, and Eaton won't be back until next April. So mm-hmm. yeah, all around not good, really.
Just sort of pausing on the Mets for a second there. Do you think they're out, or can it? I mean, without Syndergaard, without Cespedes, with that record that they've currently got, they're way below 500. It looks like their season's stillborn. It can't be long. I mean, you said there in your answer to my question that they're not quick in terms of making a move. But surely Terry Collins is on, you know, he's not on the last of his 9 lives. He's on the last of his 45 lives, brutally honest. Everybody hates it. He's got to be gone. He's got to be gone by the end of this month, surely.
I mean, if the season keeps going this badly, it feels like they ought to make a move going from, you know, team that's expected to contend to the playoffs to the start they've had. Mm. It's still early. I'm the kind of person that always tells people about small sample sizes. But if you were going to draw up a month for the Mets that had gone about as badly as possible, it would probably include losing Syndergaard and Cespedes. And coming out with a losing record. And it would also probably include the Nats looking as unbelievably unstoppable offensively as they have. And I don't even think their pitching's got into its stride yet. Mm-mm. So I think they're hoping for a wild card spot at best now. And the good news for them is the Giants look terrible. The Cards are nowhere near what they used to be. So I'm not sure that there is a great contender for both of those wild card spots. And that might be their last hope. But I think we're not too far off. Especially if Matt Harvey continues to pitch like he is as well, from mm-hmm. the Mets simply just not being a very good team. I didn't think their offense was very good anyway. And if that rotation doesn't hold up, then we could very quickly be seeing this a team that's lucky to finish 500, I think.
And a quite poor defensive team, frankly.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, Jose Reyes at third or shortstop. And, you know, they're a bit of a dumpster fire in the outfield. I mean, starting Michael Conforto in center field, he's okay. But you'd rather he was in left field. Anyway, we could probably talk about the Mets for the whole pod, to be honest. But we've got other things to come on to. Just on that NL wildcard, I'm going to throw a name out. I know they're leading their division, and it's a shame that we don't have our resident expert. My pick for the NL wildcard, I'd like to remind everyone, they were the team that I picked as a wildcard in our preseason preview with the Colorado Rockies. And hey, they're doing all right, aren't they? We should probably talk about the Rockies next week when A, Ben is with us, and B, hopefully they've turned to shit.
Yeah, I don't want to go in too in-depth and use up all the Rockies material, so we should probably save that for Ben, who I'm sure has been watching them a lot more than we have anyway. They do look really good, and even missing John Gray, who's hurt us at the moment as well, but I think he won't be too long till he's back. I think that the lineup looks pretty good. Desmond's come back and made an impact straight away, and he's not playing first base, because Mark Reynolds is actually hitting. I don't think that will last, so we'll see how that's going to go. Mm. And Trevor Story looks pretty miserable at the plate right now, but as we saw last season, he could probably hit 10 home runs in a week. So, I think you could have a chance. This is the best chance they've had for a while, I think, and the rest of the field does look pretty weak to me.
Well, you've got to have some excitement when you've got the most moribund uniforms in baseball. give them a break.
We should have a uniform off, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Uniform ranking.
We should definitely have a uniform off. We should do that in a future podcast. Mind you, Ian Desmond would look excellent in any uniform. That is a handsome specimen of the human form, even if I don't say so myself. From one specimen to another, hey, that's probably going to be the most seamless link we have all season. And the specimen I'm talking about is Aaron Judge. He's one of two players I want to talk about for a few minutes. The other, maybe not one that's on the tip of everybody's tongue in the way that Judge is, but you've written a really cool piece about him, so we'll dig into that, which is a guy called Ryan Schimpf. But more of Ryan Schimpf in a bit. Aaron Judge, right. So being a Red Sox fan and watching Aaron Judge hit a few home runs at Fenway Park, I think three last week, was rather painful. Seeing people comparing him favorably to the second best player in baseball, Mookie Betts, a man with 18.1 war in his career, rather riled me up a little bit. But then I saw a tweet today from Ryan Spader, who's on Twitter at Ace of Spader, well worth a follow, good on there digging out some stats and interesting bits and pieces, which showed Aaron Judge's numbers through 25 games next to Barry Bonds' 2001 numbers through 25 games. Now, for those of you who maybe weren't following baseball in 2001, Barry Bonds was quite good insofar as, I mean, he had the greatest defensive season in the history of baseball. He was unbelievable. Like, literally, if you put a ball in the strike zone, he hit it out of the park. If you didn't, he was happy to take that walk. His plate discipline was absolutely unbelievable. That entire stretch, 2003, 2004, he was just, quite honestly, one of the greatest baseball players ever seen. Yes, he was doing naughty things and drugs and all that, but he was pretty, pretty good nevertheless. So I'll read out the stats and then we can talk a little bit about whether Aaron Judge is bona fide or whether this is, drum roll please. Hey, it should be one of those military drums. Hey, drum roll please, military drum roll please. If only we had someone who could do it for us, but he's not here. So Aaron Judge through 25 games, small sample size, of course, but he has had 104 plate appearances, and in the same period, Barry Bonds had 106. They both had hit 13 home runs, 2001 Bonds and 26. Bonds had 17 runs, Judge has 28. Bonds had 26 RBIs, Judge has 27. Bonds had an OPS of 1.191 and Judge has an OPS of 1.251. So my question to you, Mr. Analysis, Mr. Stats, Mr. Small Sample Size, is Aaron Judge A, having a good month, B, better than Mookie Betts, C, the second incarnation of PED or Barry Bonds?
Can I say somewhere between A and B?
Okay.
I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. I think he's definitely better than we thought he was going to be. I love looking at the Statcast data. And basically, Aaron Judge hits the ball like Giancarlo Stanton, perhaps a little bit harder at the moment. So that's kind of crazy because basically up until now, Stanton didn't really have a rival. He was just kind of out on his own, blasting the ball as hard as you could possibly hit a baseball. And then Aaron Judge turned up and now it's kind of a contest. So that's really interesting. Barry Bonds is probably the greatest hitter of all time, depending on how you want to rate these things. So I'm not going to touch that one. It's an incredible month, and that's all it is in that regard. And certainly on the defensive side, I don't think Judge can touch Mookie Betts. So he'd probably have to keep hitting, not necessarily like this, but not too far off it in order to match Betts' overall value at the end of the season, I think. But nonetheless, the Yankees have got a tremendous hitter. I think, he's definitely better than we thought he was. And we're just going to have to wait and see to find out if pitchers can find a more effective way to attack him. But I think right now, and it's probably not great news for the Red Sox fans, that the Yankees look like they're going to be pretty good this year.
Yeah, what do you think about the Yankees? I'm kind of conflicted on them because obviously Sanchez isn't playing at the moment and they're getting some really poor production from Gardner, and Greg Bird had a torrid start to the season and now he's on the DL. And he's, you know, one of the baby bombers with Sanchez and Clint Frazier, and Gleyber Torres obviously when he's there. Also, your boy Didi Gregorius, the Netherlands own Didi Gregorius, he started the year on the DL. Are the Yankees for real, or have they just had a good month riding on the coattails of Judge and some, to be honest, pretty inspired pitching, particularly from Luis Severino?
Yeah, I think the pitching was more of a concern for me coming in. Certainly the fact that Sanchez is yet to come back and they've been using, you know, the likes of Austin Romine at catcher so far, I think that's going to provide a boost. And I think, yeah, Castro and Gregorius have actually been really good as well, and people haven't really noticed because everybody's talking about Aaron Judge. So I think they're more solid than I thought. I saw a lot of volatility here with you know, a lot of young guys who we didn't know what we were going to get out of. And then you've got the likes of Matt Holliday, who I think is a very good hitter, but he needs to stay healthy. And when you're in your late 30s trying to play baseball every day, that's not always so easy. So I think there's definitely some regression to come. I don't think they'll keep hitting the way they are. But I think Severino has made some nice changes. They've got a killer bullpen. And I kind of like Jordan Montgomery as well, a guy I didn't really know anything about before the season. But he's come up and he's impressed me as well. I think he could be a useful back end of the rotation kind of piece. So, yeah, I think the Yankees are going to be a lot better than I thought they were. And they're probably going to give the Red Sox a bit of a run for their money this year, as, if anything of this is real. And I think probably most of it is.
I think it is real. I think the good news for Red Sox fans is that the Red Sox seeming inability to field any baseballs probably is that might be something of a short-term problem. It also appears that somebody has done what needs to be done at some point in every Red Sox season, which is you know, hold some smelling salts under the huge kraken that is Hanley Ramirez, because he started hitting balls onto Lansdowne Street again. And once that starts, and it started an awful lot earlier this season than it did last year, it kind of doesn't stop. So good sign to the Red Sox in the last week. And we're going to talk a bit about the Red Sox again later on in relation to what's been going on between themselves and MLB's version of The Walking Dead, which is the third rostered Baltimore Orioles, who carry on being incredibly good despite having approximately one good player and a couple of half good players. And Darren O'Day, who seems to have forgotten how to pitch and yet is still closing out games in the absence of Zach Britton. We'll come on to them in a minute. But because we need to talk about Ryan Schimpf. So why the hell are we talking about Ryan Schimpf outside the context of Tom writing about the Padres for his own amusement and seemingly to get retweets and gifts from his new friends in the San Diego Padres social media team? Tell us all about Ryan Schimpf. Why are we spending 5 minutes of Thursday evening talking about him?
Well, I think Ryan Schimpf might be kind of the most unique guy in baseball right now, at least the most unique guy that you haven't heard of. Basically, the first thing that drew me to Ryan Schimpf last year was that he was hitting fly balls all the time. And this is we're talking ridiculous rate, nearly 65% of the balls he made contact with were going in the air, which, if you're not familiar, that is a lot. Most players are, you know, well under 50. Kind of 50% is considered very high, and Ryan Schimpf is up there at 65. That was basically the second highest rate ever, behind Rod Barajas, who was a catcher a few years ago, if you don't know. Not particularly good hitter either, but he sort of had enough power to get by, and not particularly good batting average. And that's kind of what Ryan Schimpf looks like. But the weird thing about Schimpf is he's hitting 148, and he's somehow managed to still be a league average hitter, more or less, which is fascinating to me. He's got a pretty decent amount of power. He's got 7 home runs, and he walks so often that basically, despite the fact that he's hitting much worse than you would expect any major league regular to do, he's staying in the lineup, he's playing okay defense, and he's been an average hitter. So I just find this completely fascinating. I don't think we've ever seen a hitter really succeed with a profile quite as extreme as this before. And I wrote about him today because I kind of wanted to dig into it a little bit further. And he's a pretty fascinating guy to me. You may not really find average players to be fascinating, but I think sometimes underneath the surface there are some pretty weird things going on, and Ryan Schimpf is definitely one of those guys.
Absolutely. I think average players, when they have something sort of completely unaverage, are probably the most interesting players. We're going to come on to another average player who's doing something distinctly unaverage again later on in the podcast. One thing that struck me, certainly in the conversation we were having, and again it was mentioned in your piece, was that he has the highest launch angle for StatCast, which is unsurprising when you talk about his 65% fly ball rate from last year, which has been borne out again this year. For those who maybe aren't following the StatCast revolution quite as closely as you and I are, and maybe a few followers on our Twitter page are, what is it? You know, what is launch angle? Why is it important? And why, especially, is Ryan Schimpf an outlier?
Launch angle is just very simply the angle at which the ball comes off the bat at contact. And the StatCast system that's basically tracking every play, every batted ball, there's tons of data out there now measuring the speed and the angle of these balls. And this can be used to do things like measure how good defensive plays are, how often such plays are made. But they've also got tons of data on how often these balls fall for a hit. So you can say if the ball's hit at 95 miles per hour and it comes off the bat at 15 degrees, that's going to be a hit 80% of the time. And then from there, you can use that to work things out, like, whether players are getting particularly lucky or unlucky. So if you're familiar with batting average on balls in play, it's kind of an extension of that. It's kind of that sort of a rudimentary version of that is 30% of the time a ball put in play will go for a hit. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're actually hitting balls in the air all the time, like Ryan Schimpf, they'll often be flyouts if they don't go over the fence, because obviously defenders in the major leagues are good, and if you give them any time to get under a ball, they're probably going to catch it. And whereas line drives are great, line drives usually have a batting average in balls in play of about 700. That's kind of StatCast takes that many steps further, and you can kind of break these things down into much more minute details. And so that's where things like launch angle come in. If you're a guy, Eric Hosmer, for example, if you hit the ball into the ground all the time, no matter how hard you swing the bat and make contact with the ball, and Hosmer does frequently, he doesn't actually hit as well as you might expect from his bat speed, because he's constantly hitting the ball into the ground, and that takes the speed away. And again, major league infielders are good, so they can easily pick those up for hits. So that's kind of where exit velocity and launch angle come in. And there is a range, and Schimpf is kind of at the very upper end of the range where you could possibly be successful. Once you kind of start going past 30 degrees, you get a bit iffy, because those turn into more pop-ups than they do decent fly balls. So he's at around just over 32% at the moment. But you don't often see balls higher than that go for hits, unless they're home runs and hit very hard, perhaps in the Aaron Judge style.
Yeah, quite. I mean, he could hit it at a launch angle of 60 degrees and it probably still go for a home run 60% of the time. It works every time. Ryan Schimpf, that's a name that I knew, but only because it's got quite a nice onomatopoeic quality.
I should note that Tom keeps calling him Schimpf Cocktail as well, which is obviously one of his favorite.
Yeah. He's got a readily available, terrible 1970s haute cuisine pun for a nickname. So, we'll surely have more Ryan Schimpf later on in the season through Tom's Tuck in Hell series. And I hope we revisit the phenomenon that is his fly ball rate later on. Maybe we should try and get Ryan Schimpf on the podcast. That should be our aim. And we can talk to him about whether this is all by process and design, or whether it's just a fluke. Maybe he won't like that. Well, we can try.
Well, now that Tom's mates with the Padres people, surely he can get Ryan on the podcast for us.
You got it. And hey, the Americans will do anything for a military veteran. I'm literally here all week. And from that nonsense on to some more, which I trailed already earlier in the conversation. Two lots of nonsense of a very different hue. The first of which is the nonsense that's been going on in Boston, which is all to do with this Manny Machado spiking incident, which happened about 3 years ago, right? Where Manny Machado accidentally...
Feels like it.
Yeah, accidentally stuck a spike into Dustin Pedroia's leg, and it's been going on and on. And Chris Sale threw his first bad pitch of the season directly at Manny Machado, and he just managed to get out of the way. Manny Machado lost his rag, quite understandably so, and said, you know, if I was throwing a bat at somebody or threatening somebody with a bat, you know, I'd be locked up in jail and this, that, and the other, and sort of had a very, very pet lip when he was doing it. If you see the pictures, he's got a face. He's got a good, sad face, Manny Machado. So it sort of heightened the impact. So as a Red Sox fan following this, it's just, I'm absolutely in such a state of distemper, because what they're doing is stupid and they should stop. Throwing a ball at people is stupid. We talked about this last week. We put a box on top of it. Just per se, it's a rock hard ball that people throw at 100 miles an hour. I don't care if you're throwing it at their head, their backside, their back, their leg. It's ridiculous. The notion that this is a sport, that people are throwing a ball at 100 miles an hour and trying to hit it with a round twig, is stupid, to be brutally honest. But then if you bring in that they're throwing it at people who are not wearing padding because they accidentally slid into someone 3 years ago, and we've been doing it back and forth in either direction ever since, it's just mad. I can't understand it. You know, as somebody who follows most sports that are played here in the UK, I've never seen anything like this. It's completely anathema to me as a British sports fan. And you sort of throw into the mix of that this utter garbage of Boston fans using this as an excuse, seemingly, to throw racial slurs and insults at, of all people, Adam Jones, one of the great ambassadors for the sport of baseball, one of the genuinely nicest people by all accounts, great ambassador for the sport. It's mad. And they threw a bag of peanuts at the guy. It's just appalling, absolutely appalling. So it's total nonsense. I think summed up best by Grant Brisby, who said that the whole scenario is starting to make it look like the Boston fans seem to think that Baltimore, particularly Manny Machado and Adam Jones, have, you know, peed on a Dunkin' Donuts bag while slagging off the Dropkick Murphys, the way that the town of Boston is treating them. Oh, goodness me. And then, so, and it goes on. This silliness goes on. So for those who missed it, Kevin Gausman, last night's starting pitcher for the Orioles, was thrown out of the game after one inning for completely inadvertently, and I've seen the pitch, completely inadvertently hitting a Boston Red Sox batter. It was just a bad pitch. And, you know, the umpire felt like he had to take it by the scruff of the neck. And everyone's favourite Rich Hall's dad lookalike, Buck Showalter, came out and poured kerosene on the flames as a man like Buck, only he can. And it just goes on and on. And I just want it to stop. Because everyone looks stupid, including those who were morally in the right, have the high ground. Buck, put a cork in the notion that you were trying to pull Manny Machado out of the game. Play the bigger man, be quiet, and maybe we can never hear of this ever again. Please, I don't want to talk about this next week. I'm sure that you think the same.
Yeah, I do. And I think Grant Brisby nailed it. He is definitely one of the finest writers. And I think especially on things like this, when it's pointing out the ludicrous moments of baseball, it's part of the culture. And so, you know, I can understand these players have come up and this has always been the way that they've done things. It's a stupid way to do things. Sooner or later, somebody is going to get badly hurt. We've seen guys like Stanton get hit in the face and you know, suffer pretty serious injuries. And these guys have also been lucky that nothing worse has happened to them. Mm-hmm. So sooner or later, if this goes on, then somebody is going to get hit in the head and it isn't going to turn out as well as it has for those other guys. Mm-hmm. And then are we going to do something about it then? Or are we going to say now, actually, guys, just grow up a bit and maybe find a different way to take this out, you know, by playing some good baseball against each other instead of trying to kill each other.
Yeah, trying to trying to beat one another would probably be a better way of doing it.
Yeah, you know, if they want to clear the benches and have a, you know, a fight where nobody really throws a proper punch and it all looks very ugly, then I would prefer that, you know, to people throwing the ball 95 miles per hour at each other's heads. And the thing with Kevin Gausman is he has been awful this year. He throws a curveball, it gets away from him. I don't know what the umpire is thinking. Somebody's obviously said to him, any action, just toss the guy. So he thought, right, he's got hit 72 mile per hour curveball. You're out of here, Kevin. Kevin Gausman can hit a barn door this season. He's been absolutely terrible. And so that was just the icing on the cake of a ridiculous week, I think. And hopefully everyone's going to turn around and go, you know what, this is silly. But given that they haven't done it on the previous three or four opportunities they've had to do it, I'm not convinced that they will now.
Yeah, there was a degree of irony that the guy who got tossed was the fella who looks like a blind man playing darts, not the one who looks like he could fire a BB through a postage stamp at 900 yards and is a psychopath and definitely would throw a ball directly at someone's head, not because someone said that he should, but because he felt like it. In Chris Sale, anyway. Ugh, stop it. Stop it. Hey, but on the bright side, and this isn't the nonsense that I want to come on to, on the bright side, the Blue Jays are still total crap. So it's not all bad. They're 9-19, still toiling away and making us all smile. God bless them. At least something in the AL East is not a load of rubbish or a load of foreboding in the size of and state of Aaron Judge. But anyway, from the AL East to the AL Central, and I want to talk about the nonsense, the absolute sheer nonsense that is the Minnesota Twins 14-9 record. What the hell is going on? Why is that a thing? Why are they in first? And why is Irvin Santana leading the ERA charts after a month and a half of the baseball season? He's not just leading, he's leading it by miles. He has an ERA of 0.66. And he's not only that, he's a ground ball pitcher. He's a guy who relies on defense to keep that ERA down on the floor. What's going on in Minnesota? Are the Minnesota Twins for real? Is Irvin Santana for real? Or is it just a honeymoon period for last year's worst team?
Yeah, I think we've seen the Twins do this relatively recently, kind of come out the gate quickly, and everybody's sort of shocked by their record. And as I recall, it did not turn out too well for them in the second half last year. So I think it's a hot start, and I think Santana's been pitching well, but I don't think he's been pitching this well. So I think he's kind of an average pitcher. I think the Twins have got some really talented guys. I love Miguel Sano. Speaking of guys who hit the ball hard, I think he's got the highest average exit velocity. Judge hits the ball harder at the max end of the spectrum, but I think Sano's average is nearly 100 miles per hour off the bat for fly balls and line drives. So he's a really impressive hitter as well, and I'd encourage people to check the Twins out just for him. I think this happens over the first month. Teams get hot and teams get cold, and I think we'll see the Twins regress, and I think that Cleveland are definitely going to come through and win that division ultimately. But there's always someone that comes out and has a hot start and surprises us all. And for some reason, it seems to quite frequently be the Twins over the last few years. I'm not really quite sure why.
So if you're listening, Yankees fans, what he's saying there without saying it directly is this refers to you too.
Yeah, and obviously the Blue Jays will be fine and they'll come back and challenge the Red Sox.
The Blue Jays are not fine. They're playing Devon Travis.
Doesn't look great, does it?
Their I would like to hear the Blue Jays smoke. What?
Justin Smoke is going to break out. I think we've had the Justin Smoke is going to break out article probably every year for the last 6 years or something. So,
well, he is. He's very much broken out, at least in small sample size style. No, that's all we've got. That's all we've got to go on, unfortunately. So that's a lot. We've trotted around a lot, and I think we're going to round it up by introing, for those who haven't seen it, a new feature that you're going to run, I think, every week if we have the opportunity, which is the games of the week for UK viewers. So you've done a bit of a rundown of the games that are on at suitable times for us to watch here in the UK, picked out some pitching matchups, picked out some teams with good offenses that are going to be playing over the weekend. We won't go through all of it, but did you have a single game perhaps that you think people should be keeping an eye out tomorrow or over the weekend?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Cubs and Yankees tomorrow night. This is an interleague series, so that means you're only going to get to see these teams play each other sort of once every 3 years. And this is the only time over the weekend that it's going to be on a UK-friendly time as well. Cubs basically always play Friday games at 7:20 UK time, and it's going to be the only game on tomorrow evening. So there's not going to be a sort of, oh, should I watch this, should I watch that? It's just Cubs and Yankees. I think both are good teams. The Yankees have obviously surprised us, as we said earlier, but the Cubs are the reigning champs. They've got a great lineup. They've got a great rotation, and I think it's going to be a pretty interesting series to watch. Two of the better starting teams this year. So, yeah, if you're going to pick one game this weekend that's on a sort of a friendly time and you haven't got anything better to do on Friday night, then I would certainly sit down tomorrow and watch the Cubs and Yankees face off. Did you have a game in mind?
Are you... It was the top end, and I was going to pick that one, which was the Cleveland Indians Kansas City Royals game, which is on Sunday evening, and was due to be last year's breakout pitching star Danny Duffy for the Royals, and Corey Kluber, Universal Soldier himself, Kluber. But you informed me, which I'd missed because I've been travelling for work today, that Kluber's gone on the 10-day DL today, and his start is going to be taken by Mike Clevenger. And much as I like Mike Clevenger and enjoyed his contribution to the Cleveland Indians World Series run last year, some might say second only to that of Rajai Davis, but those people are clearly not big enough fans of Jeff Manship. That's not quite got the same allure. It'll be interesting to see if he gets back to where he was at the back end of last year, having been down in AAA. But it's less fun, isn't it? You know, Kluber and Duffy, that's the AL Central's...
I might suggest the Boston game to people on Sunday now, because we've just been talking about the Twins. Chris Sale faces Ervin Santana. Hopefully there'll be less shenanigans and more actual pitching. But that's kind of looking like an interesting matchup as well on Sunday night.
The man who's leading on half the stats versus the man who's leading on half the others, the man who's the current ERA and FIP leader, and the man who's the true hero of all of our hearts, and a one-man army in and of himself, Chris Sale. Yeah, so yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Darius, I would have been watching that anyway. But let's pretend that I would have been watching Corey Kluber and Danny Duffy for the sake of this conversation, and to suggest I do watch other games of baseball.
I will pick out another one, not for both starters necessarily, but James Paxton is a really exciting guy, really dialed the velocity up last year. He's sort of adjusted his delivery and now, you know, gets to triple digits sometimes. Really exciting pitcher to watch. He goes on Sunday night against Texas at 9:10. So if you're kind of looking for a different team to watch as well, I think you can certainly watch one of those sort of 6:30 games and then go on to that Texas-Seattle game at 9:10. I think that'd be a good one to watch as well.
Great. So on that note, giving you your entire viewing plan for this weekend, I think that's a good, solid place to end this conversation for this week. And we'll be back next week. Hopefully Tom and Ben will be able to join us. We've got a guest up our sleeve, which we were hoping to get on with us this evening, and it hasn't quite come to pass, but hopefully we'll hear from them next week and more of that as and when we have it. Before we go, Darius, where do we find you on Twitter, and what have you been writing about this week other than Ryan Shin, if anyone cares to find it?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. If you do want to find the Ryan Schimpf article, I don't think I mentioned that it's over at Banished to the Pen. So that's just banishedtothepen.com. And I've also been writing over at Fantasy Pros. I did an exit velocity risers and fallers piece this week. That's based on the Statcast data we were talking about earlier as well. So I picked out a few guys who have seen their exit velocity go up and go down over the first month of the year, and kind of talked a bit about whether that was real. And then actually sort of as we're recording now, the Phillies are playing the Cubs. I'm doing the game recap for BP Wrigleyville that will be going up later tonight. So if you're interested in the outcome of that game, or you know, you just want to read my first ever game recap over at Wrigleyville, then you can go to Baseball Prospectus Wrigleyville and check that out. So yeah, plenty of stuff this week.
I'll certainly be picking up on that one to see your take on John Lackey being taken on by Michael Franco. any opportunity to get a shot in at John, the better. So that's where Darius is. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Epu Von Tail. I'm not going to be going into my front room and watching a game in order to write a recap, because I've got some really important stuff to do. I'm putting together my own military songs megamix, which I'm going to pass on to Tom. If anyone wants to give me any suggestions, we've already got In the Navy by Village People. We've got In the Army Now by Status Quo. We've got The Trooper by Iron Maiden. And my personal favourite, the underrated Christmas song, Stop the Cavalry by Jonah Louie. They're all on Tom's C90 cassette. But if anyone's got any suggestions for him before he gets back next week for his special gift, make sure you pass them on. But in the meantime, I've been John McGee. He's been Darius Austin. We've been taking the piss. See you next time. Hello and welcome to Batflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast. Oh, shit. We'll start that again. Just got myself too riled up.